SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number three, live right here on this Monday on the Early Line. It's our third and final hour to kick off this new week on Sports Grid to really kick off all of 2024 in college football. Week one on the horizon. It starts with 21 games featuring an FBS program on Thursday. But week zero already started 2024's college football season with theatrics and drama and upsets even over in Ireland. We'll talk Florida State to start off this third and final hour in just a moment. After that, DRS, a ton of Major League Baseball conversations. We'll set the slate for this 11-game slate that features a doubleheader in Cleveland between the Guardians and the Royals on this Monday. We'll get the prop perspective from Sports Grid's Tom Vecchio here in this third hour as well.
Yeah, love it, too. Day-night doubleheader. So you get some afternoon baseball here on a Monday. Can never say no to that against a very good matchup and then see it later on. And also keep in mind, pivotal points in the season for that central matchup between those two teams. Looking to gain ahead, somebody getting momentum, coming after some tough series. So some good stuff to talk about in MLB for sure today.
And I very much look forward to this conversation with noted Florida State hater Donnie Wrightson. Yeah. FSU gets by Georgia Tech. The 10th-ranked Seminoles in Dublin lose outright as a double-digit favorite, 24-21. Is FSU's season over? Can they still, in this new expanded field of 12, make the college football playoff? That was the question to all of you in Fade the Public. And by the way, I mentioned that his name is Donnie Wrightside. We've met Donnie Wrightside before, and now Donnie Rigside at SportsGrid on Twitter. Will Florida State make the college football playoff? Hashtag NCAA football, hashtag CFP, at Ben Scott Stevens, at Rigside VP. You just keep changing your name on us, and we don't even – go ahead. Yeah, take a moment.
I mean, here's the thing right now, like at Ben Scott Stevens, like 37 syllables and words and everything in there. And then you get like sometimes you fat finger like, oh, I just got the wrong key. Like you skip two letters in my at. Right. That even make usually it's like R-I-G-A-I. I missed one here. Or VP somehow ended up a VR. Just you messed it up by accident. But missing two of them at that point is pretty incredible. So I didn't see this poll. I voted on it, retweeted it, but didn't actually see the poll until we actually went live here. I was like, come on now.
What I was so surprised by moments before we started on this Monday morning, you hit a quiz on it because I wasn't going to tell you about it. We were going to do our little surprise, ha ha ha, Rigside, Donnie Rigside.
Yeah.
But you still hit a retweet on it, so I knew that you had seen that your at and your handle was a little bit different.
I mean, that's what you're supposed to take for granted, right? You read the first line, and you know what the ats are here, and you just get after yes or no at that point, and, you know, it's the way it is. But the fact that it was butchered so poorly today, maybe it was like a Florida State intern, if we had one, that was just trying to get back here. Because now the slant, now since my name got messed up, maybe the slant is going to get worse now.
You know, it's interesting, too. I feel that you could build that heat. Not only that, but maybe it was a Florida State intern being like, this guy's going to cook the books if he sees the poll, hits a retweet, and all of his followers that hate FSU just as much as Donnie, they're going to vote no. Donnie still hit the retweet, and we got a lot of no's. Nearly 88% of the public saying no, Florida State will not make the college football playoff. And there is Rigside VP in full. 88% saying no. FSU has no stinking chance of seeing the CFP this year. I know Donnie agrees.
Yeah, and it's only right. Like, nobody's really hating Florida State at this point with answering this question with a no. We can only judge by what we saw. A double-digit favorite coming into the season in an ACC game. Win it by 1 point, and this poll's not even that close because you're like, okay, it was first game. They picked up the win. That's what's important. They probably win the next four games before they meet up against a ranked opponent. Now you're taking a look at this team and questioning if they can even beat Boston College the following week, which is this weekend. It's not even like, hey, we played over there. We're going to get that bye week to sort of regroup. You're right back out there this weekend to take on BC, and there's question marks about this entire Florida State team. Now, will they be better than what they showed? Probably so, but this still gets back and stems, and a lot of it's tongue-in-cheek. The fact that you have a head coach that couldn't sell his players on showing up for the Orange Bowl when Georgia did that on the opposite side, that's questions about leadership to me. And going into the offseason and recreating this roster, coming away with another loss here, look, that's the only thing you can think about at this point. This team wasn't prepared once again in a big bowl game and then an offseason in another quote-unquote bowl game over there in Ireland. So that's where I'm left to believe. Florida State not making the playoff because they lost, yes, but also the question marks about the leadership of this program getting embarrassed twice in a row, that's a tough pill to swallow.
Right. But this result is so much more significant than even a New Year's Six Bowl and the Orange Bowl and what it means for these programs. This one has direct ramifications on Florida State's outlook for the entirety of 2024. I do not question Mike Norvell's ability to lead this FSU program, like Donnie just alluded to right there. But one of the reasons that there were questions to answer for the Noles is what we saw in the Orange Bowl. Everybody that had opted out because they were about ready to go to the National Football League. Key guys on defense, Jared Verse, Braden Fisk. Key guys on offense, obviously the injury to Jordan Travis, but Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson in those wide receiver spots. And then you lose Jordan Travis, and you have to make up some ground in terms of what you were doing at the quarterback spot. DJ Uiagalelei over there in Ireland, not great. The wide receivers, because of it, didn't really factor into the game. Trey Benson, who is no longer with FSU, did not have a great replacement in Roydell Williams, at least Florida State not able to take advantage on the ground, as we might have guessed, against a really bad Georgia Tech rushing defense from a season ago. But here is the silver lining for the Noles, and it might be very difficult to find as of this moment. Unlike years past, pretty much in the entirety of college football, but certainly in the 10-year, four-team format of the college football playoff, FSU still has a path. There is still going to be opportunities for Florida State. Last year, to make the college football playoff, Florida State had to be perfect. The margin of error is not 100%. There's not a ton of wiggle room for FSU, as we see represented in the market movement. The price to win the ACC, preseason favorites, more than doubles. Same exact thing for the college football playoff number. But last year, DRS, that CFP number at plus 160 before the year got started. Now at plus 360, only $2 added on. That number might have been 5-1 plus 750 if Florida State crumbled in the way they did against Georgia Tech. It's only plus 360, not only because of the at-large berth, but Florida State still has a great opportunity within the ACC to make a run to a conference championship game, and a 10-2 ACC champion gets an automatic berth. A 10-2 ACC champ last year had no shot of sniffing the college football playoff.
Yeah, and we're going to get a pretty good look over the next 2 weeks here on how good that ACC actually is, because we don't look at the ACC the same way we do as like the Big Ten and take a look at the SEC. That's why you can say, okay, if you can afford a loss early in conference play and fight yourself back, like let's just say Miami takes the field, and there's a lot of hype around Miami this year coming in as a top 20 team. They get hammered by an unranked Florida. Like, okay, now what are we doing? And Clemson, they're no longer the Clemson that we saw over the past decade or so. They are certainly beatable. So that's why that door is still open, and it's better to get those conference losses out of the way early, even if it is against a team like Georgia Tech that you were supposed to beat favored by double digits. That's still something to watch. So the door isn't closed, but I think everybody watching that game goes, look, they're just not good, which means, are they actually going to run the table in the ACC playing some quality opponents here? Probably not. And that's why I got the no vote for myself.
And Donnie is spot on. Clemson opens the year against Georgia on Saturday. Miami makes the road trip to Gainesville against Florida. We'll learn about the top of the ACC quick. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It is the final week of August, which means we only have one more week before the final month of the Major League Baseball regular season in the hunt for October. If you are in the playoff mix, and there's not all that many teams that have a realistic chance with just over 30 games left, but if you are in the playoff mix and you want to get hot at the right time, this is your chance. We update the standings and what it means in terms of those pennant prices live right here on this Monday. So, DRS, we start in the National League. Both the Dodgers and the Phillies, weekend victories. LA now a game and a half advantage over Philadelphia for that top spot in the National League and home field advantage all throughout the postseason. The Phils slightly in front of the Brewers for that opening round bye and through the wild card round. The Diamondbacks, a sweep this weekend once again over the Red Sox. They have a 4.5 game advantage over the Braves for the top National League wild card spot. The Padres split with the Mets. They have a 3-game lead over Atlanta for that second wild card spot, but Atlanta still holds on to a 2.5 game advantage over the New York Mets for that third and crucial final wild card spot in the National League. One of the things that stands out to me, the D-backs and the Padres now at 9-1, only a dollar behind Atlanta in those pennant prices. All three of those teams in wild card positions still in front of Milwaukee, who has a double-digit lead for the National League Central.
Yeah, we're looking at these the way they set up, right? Diamondbacks, Padres, Braves, if it ended today, those would be the three wild card teams. Now, granted, some of those teams in the NL West playing for higher aspirations as if they can take down the Dodgers, and legitimately, they're within striking distance. The one thing that the Phillies are getting a little bit lucky is when they're not playing their great baseball, they haven't really got within striking distance. We're talking about like the Braves or let's just say the Mets here, where it gets down like two games and you really start to get nervous. Now, we already talked about the Phillies and the Braves are going to play a 4-game set this weekend, which is going to be big because if the Phillies end or the Braves can take it, it's not winning, right, Ben, 2 of 3 games in a series, which is nice. You winning the series, which means 3 or 4 of those games, and that can really shift the balance of power. But let's focus on the wild card race in the NL right now. Diamondbacks, Padres, Braves as the season ended today. I do still think there's an opportunity for the New York Mets to chase down the Braves, and it might get, as I said, even closer this week if the Phillies can handle their business in Philadelphia. But let's remove that from the equation. I really don't think the Giants, Cardinals, and Cubs, which are 5-5 and 5.5 games back respectively, feel like they're going to be good enough to jump the Mets and the Braves to get into a one of those wild card spots. So for me, it feels like it's a foregone conclusion. Now, granted, we still have a month left of the season. The Diamondbacks and the Padres will be those wild card teams, and the Braves and the Mets probably going to fight it out who's going to get that final spot. I would be shocked that the Giants, Cardinals, and Cubs were able to make up enough ground to leap those. So it just feels like the Mets are that last hope to overtake the Atlanta Braves here to get that final wild card spot for me.
And again, a 2.5 game lead with more than 30 games left in this Major League Baseball season might not feel insurmountable, but it's not necessarily the quickest advantage to change in the random sport that is baseball. There is a pretty good pedigree on the Braves, even with the roster that has been so injury-stricken throughout this year, to hold off the Mets. Again, when you look at the odds, Atlanta's price for whatever reason with a 2.5 game lead to make the playoffs is not up, but the Mets' price to make the playoffs is 3-1. Give me just a moment here to see how many times the Braves and the Mets play each other throughout the remainder of this regular season. They will finish the second to last series of the year in Atlanta between the Mets and the Braves. If it is close, there's your opportunity, but it also could lead to Atlanta really extending that lead. And Donnie, to your point, I really do believe the National League wildcard chase is between two teams for that final spot. 5 games back for both the Giants and the Cardinals, and a little bit more even for the Cubbies is a lot of ground to make up at this moment.
Yeah, and also let's keep in mind when the schedules change, initially with, let's just say, interleague play, obviously more games are going to be played outside of your own division. But even in the past couple years, right, they wanted to make it more of a uniform schedule. So typically it's good that you bring up, Ben, like, ooh, when were they going to play? Because 9 times out of 10 in the past, it used to be like, okay, they're going to play a 3-game set in Atlanta the first week of September, and 2 weeks later, a 3-game set in New York. So you would have ample opportunities to sort of close that ground in a head-to-head environment, which now you don't get as much of in Major League Baseball because of the uniform scheduling that they wanted to have. So you're sort of robbed a little bit of that. But then again, it's up to the Major League Baseball teams. They're all in the same boat. You all have the same schedule to play with throughout the season. So you can't be upset that we wanted more games against the Mets and the Braves because that would decide it. Like, no, you should have handled your business early in the year. But we are a little bit robbed of those confrontations that typically you would have in September to try to clinch those divisions or playoff spots.
Only 13 divisional games against your opponent. Yeah. So you play each opponent 13 times. Used to be closer to 19 around MLB. Yeah. And so far between Atlanta and New York in the head-to-head this year, 10 games played. The Braves have won 5. The Mets have won 5 as well. New York's schedule down the stretch, not easy. Their final 5 series, 7 games against the Phils. They have a series against the Nationals. They end the year against Milwaukee by that point because the Brew Crew has a 10-game lead right now for the top spot in the National League Central. Milwaukee's probably going to have to do very little. That could actually be a blessing in disguise, at least on paper right now, for the New York Mets. Let's talk about the Brewers, DRS. Plus 950. They're a game behind Philadelphia for that second spot, which would be the final bye through the wild card round. If Milwaukee, for whatever reason, were to catch Philadelphia or LA down the stretch, do you think it would even move the Brewers' number to win the National League pennant?
I still think it would, because then again, when you're going to line up against that team you just crossed over, it means you would get home field advantage in your ballpark at that point. So it will make a difference. But I just feel like the odds are out because the playoffs are judged much, much differently than the regular season. And you hear me say a lot, I think Milwaukee plays playoff baseball on a night-to-night basis. It's not the, hey, let's outslug you 10-7, let's beat you 3-1, 3-2 at that point. But I just figure people are, you know, posting up with the Dodgers, who have a decent starting pitching staff that they didn't have for most of the summer, by the time you get around to playoff baseball. And the Phillies are going to open up playoff baseball with Zach Wheeler, followed by Aaron Nola, and now looks like Ranger Suarez came back off the aisle with a quality performance against Kansas City. That's the way you match up the playoffs, and that's why you have the favorite.
For sure.
It's about the matchups, not necessarily the totality of the season and how it played out.
And you might be thinking, ooh, Arizona's been so hot. Could they catch Milwaukee? Yeah. The three divisional winners get those top three spots.
Exactly.
More than likely, it's the Diamondbacks and the Padres in that wild card series as the Dodgers maintain a 3-game lead in the National League West. So the American League up next on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The American League playoff picture live on this Monday on the Early Line on Sports Grid. Then we'll dive into some of the slate on this Monday as well. The top three spots right now, the three first place team in the divisions. The Yankees, a 1.5-game lead over Baltimore. The Guardians, 3 games up over both the Twins and the Royals in the American League Central. And the Astros pulling away a 4.5-game lead over Seattle in the American League West. The O's 11-12 here in the month of August. They've been pretty mediocre since the All-Star break. Still maintain a pretty good cushion for that top American League wild card spot. The Royals and the Twins, the same exact record, 72-58. Donnie, it's going to be slightly competitive for the final National League wild card spot. Can the Braves hold off the Mets? The odds makers would say so. The Royals and the Twins, both a 4.5-game lead over Boston for the final wild card spots in the American League.
Yeah, and it seems like, again, where you sort of have that cutoff level, but do we even have a cutoff level here? We talked about the National League. It's like, okay, maybe the Mets can jump over the Braves, but now you're taking a look here as the Royals in that final spot if the season ended today, a 4.5-game lead over the Boston Red Sox, who are losers of 3 straight games, and those 3 straight games were in their own ballpark, taking on Arizona. So if I'm saying to myself, I thought Boston had its chance to surge a little bit earlier in the season, and it looks like it may be stalled out. Now, the one thing that you can maybe factor in is, once again, again, the pedigree technically is not with Kansas City to say, yes, they're so talented, they're going to run away with this down the stretch. A lot of young ball players on that team who don't have a lot of success winning, and you're dealing with some pitchers here on that same sort of ilk. So my money still going to say the Royals are going to make it in, and I don't think the Red Sox, yeah, the Mariners, Tampa Bay, or Detroit is going to be able to jump into it. So if we are solidified, again, it's still a toss-up who's going to win the Central and who's going to win the East, but I don't think the Boston Red Sox at 4.5 games back have enough to get over the hump. And we talked about it earlier, right? Tanner Houck, your ace of the staff, leaking oil now. Things just aren't looking as rosy in Boston as they were just a few short weeks ago.
So is Seth Lugo for KC, but 4.5 games is a substantial margin to make up in baseball. The Royals have the third most difficult schedule remaining in MLB. They don't play the White Sox anymore throughout this season, which is a tough thing for an American League Central club. But the reason 4.5 games is difficult, even if the Royals, in this difficult 31-32 game schedule remaining, end the year 14-18. That's a lot that Boston has to do to even leapfrog a Royals team that ends the final month with a losing record. We'll get to KC in just a moment. The most compelling race, in my opinion, is the top spot of the American League East. The Yankees and the O's, the second to last set of the season against each other. The Yanks, a 1.5 game advantage over Baltimore. New York, -180 to win the division. Donnie, do you agree with the odds makers? Have the Yanks clearly set themselves ahead in the American League East in your mind?
I don't know if they clearly set themselves per se, because again, we still have a whole month down the stretch, and you have one bad week, one team has one good week, and away you're way back into the standings, back in it for the Orioles. But we're sort of setting the stage, and we were going through this with the Yankees for a couple weeks, like, ooh, what's gotten into them? I know I picked them to win this division. They're starting to slip out of it here. The pitching isn't as good. The hitters aren't stepping up to the plate. Fast forward to today, where you're talking about the two best players maybe in the American League on the same team with Juan Soto and Aaron Judge, and there's pulverizing their opponents on a day-to-day basis, and the Baltimore Orioles, you're trying to line them up and say their starting staff, including Corbin Burns, isn't what we thought it was going to be. And what is it actually going to look like when the playoffs actually start in October? Yeah. So for my money, I still do think the Yankees are the favorite. It's not a runaway at this point, but I just wanted to stay for real with that all summer long. I was always a Yankees guy here, and I didn't change my tune when they fell out of first place. I'm not going to change that tune now that they're back in first place. I always thought they were the best team here in the AL East.
An intriguing matchup today for the top spot in the American League Central. Again, the Guardians 3 games ahead of both Minnesota and KC. That could change on a dime for Kansas City and Cleveland today. A doubleheader in the land. The Guardians, an underdog in game one. Cole Reagans gets the start for KC. The Guardians, as of right now, a favorite slightly in game number two. How does this play out today, DRS, in the land?
I mean, the best you could probably hope for either team is you just get the split and get back to business here. But if you're looking at the pitching matchups, I do think Kansas City does have a slight advantage in games one and games two, which, again, doesn't always equate to victories. I'm also interested to see how these managers play it with so much up in the air. Let's just say Cleveland wins game number one. You giving some of your players off game number two to even up the field, or are you going to press that lever down? Because typically in, let's just say, May and June and maybe earlier July, it's like, hey, you know what? We can't risk by injuring a player, playing him too much. That's not the case right now. Yeah. You win two games over a division rival, you better take advantage of that and not say, we won game one. Let's just see what happens in game number two.
Cleveland could extend in front of KC. The Royals dropped their final two games to the Phillies this weekend at home, giving up 11 runs both Saturday and Sunday. Tom Beck joins us next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Sports Grid's Tom Vecchio joins us live right here on this Monday morning on the early line on Sports Grid for his prop perspective, both at the daily slate we will see today in MLB, some season-long props from the home run prop king to the home run leader in Aaron Judge, and a post-preseason pick to get you set for the NFL campaign in 2024. Tom Vecchio, as always, thank you for being here on the early line.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to, you know, be here under an official capacity, I guess, now. Really interesting time. We have preseason wrapped up in the NFL. Rosters are being cut down. We know who's going to be making the squads. I have a very, very interesting season-long prop that I'm super high on. You know, let's roll with it.
Let's roll right into it. We're not exactly sure what the Falcons' plan is with Michael Penix Jr., having sat him in the final two games of their preseason slate, but we're pretty darn sure that Kirk Cousins is the starting quarterback in Atlanta, signing a four-year, $180 million deal earlier this offseason. He now steps in as the Falcons' signal caller, but Vecchio last year only played 10 games after suffering a torn Achilles. So what do you expect out of Kirk in his first year in the ATL? What does that lead you to believe in terms of his season-long props?
Yeah, I'm very high on Cousins, so Cousins over 3,800 passing yards. Obviously, to what he did.
Couple technical difficulties with our guy Vecchio. Now, listen, I just got to say, and this is not on Tom. There's some weather here in the Northeast. You never know what Wi-Fi signals are going to do. I don't think Vecchio's ever had a Wi-Fi issue until he started now working at Sports. Is that a Spiz Grizz curse in terms of the technology? Vecchio, we're glad to have you back here.
Considering I'm hardwired in and not Wi-Fi, this is rather surprising. But we roll on with Kirk Cousins over 3,800 passing yards. You know, I'm big on the Falcons this year, not only him and Drake London, but, you know, this is going to be a new look for the Falcons offense. Obviously, Raheem Morris, now the head coach, but more importantly, Zach Robinson, who's the new OC, who's with the Rams since 2019, was their passing game coordinator. Love the fact that they have a top 10 offensive line. They have the number one easiest strength of schedule right now, and Kirk Cousins is surrounded by a ton of talent. Drake London, like I said, Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson, they have a ton of options. And Kirk Cousins is a quarterback who has routinely gone for over 4,000 yards. He was actually on a good pace last year before he got hurt. So I like what I'm seeing from their offense. I like being high on them long term. I like Drake London from a betting perspective. I already spoke about him. From a fantasy perspective, I think it is all systems go for the Falcons this year.
Yeah, I do think it as well. I think they win that division. I do think the addition over there of Kirk Cousins really is going to change some things up in that passing game. And just breaking it down, roughly about 223 yards per game Kirk Cousins needs. As long as he's healthy and playing a lot of games in a dome, he should be just fine there. Let's flip it over to Major League Baseball here, Tom, and take a look at the two best players in each league careening towards MVP seasons. That's Aaron Judge. If you take a look at the FanDuel Sportsbook, how about this? Aaron Judge hit 63-plus home runs this season, is now listed at a minus 115 price. Aaron Judge, a triple crown at a plus 520 price. And if you flip it over to Shohei Ohtani, the 50-50 club. You've got to be kidding me. Is only at a plus 175 price. That tells you how talented of a season Ohtani is having. And the triple crown for him is at a 10-1 price. Talk to us about Judge and Ohtani and some of these numbers.
Yeah, the MVP awards are probably locked up at this point. I would never lay, you know, minus 110 or minus 115 on a home run prop, just considering how variable they are, despite how good Judge has been. The Judge Triple Crown is interesting. He's batting .333 right now. Witt is up at .347, so that is relatively close. I think the most interesting one, besides Judge, would be Ohtani, and would be Ohtani going for 50-50. I don't think the Triple Crown is in play for Ohtani. Judge can certainly get there, but I think Ohtani has a better chance to get 50-50 rather than the Triple Crown. The batting average is too close. The home runs are too close, but the 50-50, I think, is on the table because the home runs will be there. I think the stolen bases actually have a pretty good chance because it's not like the Dodgers are sitting with a 10-12 game lead as we kind of expected they were. They have a 3-game lead right now in the West. They have to continue pushing for that division title. Betts is back. They have to have all systems go. You know, their offense, they can't kind of ease off the gas. So give me Ohtani going for 50-50 rather than the Triple Crown.
He joined the 40-40 club on Friday with a grand slam. Shohei Ohtani, second most stolen bags, more than 20 behind Ellie De La Cruz, but still the second most stolen bases in all of MLB this year. Shohei Ohtani has the second most stolen bases at 40. He's got the second most home runs with 41. He's 10 behind Aaron Judge, and the guy's going to pitch again next year. Perhaps the only concern is Ohtani hit by a pitch yesterday, but they said x-rays negative, a sigh of relief breathed in L.A. Aaron Judge, by the way, already over his preseason home run prop of 41.5, already got the 50-plus. That was plus 300. And Vecchio, as you well know, seems well on pace to at least be the home run leader in the bigs this year. It was a 7-1 number before the year got started. Elsewhere on this Monday, we go to Minneapolis. Two teams in the wild card chases in their respective leagues. It's the Twins hosting the Braves. Over-under is 8. Minnesota, a home favorite now at minus 120. The market moving in the Twin Cities. What do you expect out of the opener this week in Minneapolis?
Wouldn't be surprised to see at least a lack of offense in this game. I will say there are some opportunities across the market to find some middle grounds and pitching props. Bailey Ober, over 5.5 strikeouts, is sitting at minus 150 on some books. It's also under 6.5 and minus 152 on some other books. So, you know, with the Braves, with their offense, Michael Harris got removed yesterday or the day before with a hand thing. Their lineup keeps taking hits like every other day. At a certain point, this lineup like isn't very good anymore, and Bailey Ober is a good enough pitcher to rack up a few strikeouts, so I don't expect him to have 8 or 9, but getting over 5, maybe still staying under 6.5, I think there's some interesting opportunities in this game.
In the Heartland today, San Diego going to take on St. Louis. Vasquez versus Gibson, a slight favorite here for the hometown Cards here at a minus 118 price and a total of 9.5. It looks like St. Louis just about going to be extinguished here from the playoffs, and the Padres yesterday stole a big-time game off of the Mets. What happens tonight here in St. Louis and San Diego, Tom?
I don't know who wins this game, but we're going to see some offense in this one. It's super hot in St. Louis. It's going to be over 90 degrees. Both pitchers are just about as average as you can get. Randy Vasquez, Kyle Gibson, both have allowed BABIPs over 300. Both strikeout rates under 22%. Gibson's allowing 1.19 home runs per nine. Vasquez at 1.32. There's enough offense on both sides, obviously, mainly with the Padres. I expect some scoring tonight. It's basically a coin flip when it comes to the money line, but give me some runs tonight. Yeah. I don't care who wins. I think the Padres keep rolling ultimately.
Yeah, San Diego 15-7 in August. The Cards have won their last two series against the Brewers and the Twins, but still just an even 500 on the outside looking in at the National League playoff picture. Vecchio, let's go elsewhere around MLB on this Monday. We're calling it a potential World Series preview. Maybe. Two divisional frontrunners, the Phils in the National League East, the Astros in the American League West. They head to the bank today in Philly. Zach Wheeler gets the start for the Phils. They're booked as a minus 172 home money line favorite. What's your favorite play?
That'd be going to Zach Wheeler under 6.5 strikeouts. And, you know, I've spoken before over the past few years about Wheeler and Nola being two of the best, if not the two best pitchers in the NL, that combo. But, you know, the Astros are a really good team, and the Astros are super disciplined. I've said time and time again, they have a super low strikeout rate versus Rays at 18.5%, so it's the third lowest in the league. They also have a very solid offense at 111 WRC plus versus righty. So ultimately, I think it's a wash, and I think I'll just take the under on Wheeler tonight. It's also a good hitter's park, as we know.
So, Vecchio, as we have 11 games on this Monday, it's because of the addition of the doubleheader in Cleveland. Day-night doubleheader, what's your best play from the two games in the land?
Yeah, that's going to be Logan Allen for the Guardians, under 4.5 strikeouts. He's got a low 19.2% strikeout rate. Royals also super disciplined versus lefties, and also a 19% strike rate. It's the fifth lowest in the league. You know, looking back over Allen's game, like, we see this one game against the Giants with 9 strikeouts, but he's routinely just going for 3 or 4, maybe 5 on a given day. So, again, siding with the under for a low strikeout pitcher.
Allen gets the start in game number 2 for the Guardians. They're a slight home favorite in that second game, a slight home underdog in game 1. Day baseball in Cleveland between the Royals and the Guardians. Tom Vecchio, we appreciate the time as always. More MLB breakdowns next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
More MLB plays on this Monday. DRS, we go to your neck of the woods in Philadelphia first. Zach Wheeler and the Phils, a minus 172 favorite against the Astros, who sent out Ronel Blanco. As we look at the total today in Philadelphia, 8 is the number. The under has the juice. The Astros split their four-game set, winning the finale yesterday in Baltimore against the O's this weekend. The Phils taking the final two games in KC. The offense picking up once again. They scored at least 11 runs, or scored exactly 11 runs, excuse me, in the last two games. What are your thoughts for game one today in Philadelphia between the Phillies and the Astros?
You usually get a bigger bump from the home team that's fresh off of not playing on Sunday Night Baseball. But if you keep in mind how close, like, Houston was playing to Philadelphia last night, it's not that long of a trip. And it's not going to be like, hey, you know, we played in Los Angeles, so we've got to fly to the East Coast. We just played on Sunday Night Baseball. Right. So you'll get a better performance out of the Houston Astros from a refreshment point. But having said that, Philadelphia Phillies have been very good this weekend on offense, waking out of their slumber. If you take a look at Blanco, he's a right-handed pitcher, but he does really struggle with left-handed batters. That's Schwarber, that's Harper, that's Stott, that's Marsh in this lineup, and also Austin Hayes on the back end of it. It'd be interesting to see him coming back into the flow now, fresh off of that hamstring injury. But if I'm just being optimistic, Zach Wheeler's on the mound. It's a two-game streak here. These are the ones you're supposed to win, but I just have this malaise over the Phillies for me. It's like, okay, we won yesterday. Everybody in our division lost again. It's okay if we lose them. Like, I just feel like that's the, and I understand that's not the psyche of Zach Wheeler taking the mound or Bryce Harper. I'm like, right. You know what? Six-game lead, it's not that big of a deal. Sooner or later, you got to put your foot down here. It was a nice series win against Kansas City. Now you have three games at home up here against Houston, followed by four games at home against the Atlanta Braves. You're supposed to go 5-2 in those games, but also start these series off with a victory, not climbing from behind. So I do think the Phillies have the better pitcher on the mound and technically the better lineup in their home ballpark. They should win this game. But how many times have you seen me breaking down Phillies games saying they're supposed to win this game only to draw dead and have me go again in the first inning? You know what? Watch the top of the first. Phillies down 2-0. I'm out for the rest of the night here. Just give me something to enjoy. Watch. Not yesterday with Bohm catching a baseball and stepping on third base as if it's three outs and it was only two outs. I'm like, I can't even watch this anymore at this point. So hopefully they can pick up a dub tonight. Goodness.
He made up for it, though, did Alec Bohm. A couple of RBIs in the game. Nick Castellanos, a two-run shot. Bryce Harper, an RBI double. Kyle Schwarber, three ribbies. You want the big names in that offensive lineup to come through. They did yesterday to win the rubber match and the set in Kansas City. So now Philadelphia, an opportunity back home against the Astros. It is an advantage right now for the Phils in the National League East. Still have six games over the Braves. The Braves on the road to start off this week in Minnesota against the Twins, as we shared with Vecchio. Minnesota, a -120 home money line favorite. Over under is 8. The Twins lost the weekend to the Cardinals. The Braves won the weekend, had a chance for a sweep yesterday against the Nats. Washington did avoid that sweep.
Yeah, that heat wave out in the Midwest yesterday, you saw that Phillies game, 90-plus degree temperatures there, sweating up a storm. The reason I bring that up is tonight in Minnesota, typically not that environment, like, oh, it's going to be hot. No, 88 degrees at first pitch at night tonight in Minnesota going up against Atlanta. Slight wind blowing in from right field at 5 miles per hour. If we are looking at Bailey Ober, he's had a very good season, particularly over the past 30 days. 126 batters, Ben, he's faced. How about an 087 ISO with a weighted on base percentage of 199? How about a K rate at 28% combined with a highlight of 32% of the left-handed batters that go against him have struck out in the last month? And let's flip it over to the other side. Max Fried hasn't been great over the past month, but he does have decent ISO power numbers against, which is 064 through 92 batters that he's faced over the past month. But if you are taking a look at that Twins lineup, which I do like, they haven't hit left-handed pitching all that great here. Last 30 days in that lineup, outside of Royce Lewis, Santana, and Farmer, a lot of guys below 500 per se there at that weighted on base percentage and a lot of strikeouts here. So instead of saying, I actually think, and I do, that the Twins will win this game, you know what I like better in this game? I don't think we get the 9 runs here. I'll take the under 8.
It is a little intriguing to see Max Fried get a start for Atlanta, even on the road, in the Braves being underdog, but that is the case as of right now. Again, Atlanta 2.5 games up for that third and final wild card spot in the National League. Late night out in the Pacific Northwest, the Mariners, a series victory this weekend. Good for Seattle over San Francisco. The Rays go all the way up the West Coast to the Northwest after losing their weekend set to L.A., that being the Dodgers, yesterday. The Mariners, a home favorite today, 4.5 games back of Houston in the American League West. If there is ever going to be a charge for the Mariners, it starts right here, right now. Will Seattle answer the call?
Yeah, here's what's going to answer the call. Is anybody going to be able to get the four runs in this baseball game? That's the question mark. Mm. You see that total, which is ultra low at 7, and rightfully so. If you're taking a look at two Major League Baseball teams right now and said, boy, which teams would you not want to have at the plate in a key situation? It's probably the Tampa Bay, and it's probably Seattle. So for myself, again, true pitcher's ballpark, late night game. It needs to be a playoff atmosphere for both of these teams because there is no tomorrow if you continuously lose. So I look for myself saying, I don't know who's going to win this game because I do think it's a toss-up, but I'm not taking this game to go over 8 runs to lose. I think it stays at 7 or less here, so another under on the card for me.
Yeah, 7 is that total. Might we see some offense where it's hot under the arch in St. Louis? Total is 9 between the Padres and the Guardians. St. Louis, a slight home favorite. What's the play?
Yeah, the play for me, obviously, just looking towards against St. Louis and towards San Diego. Gibson's on the mound. Last 30 days, terrible. A 209 ISO against with a weighted on base percentage of 372, but that's an equal opportunity, Ben. Lefties and righties getting the best of him. Outside of Jake Cronenworth, 139 ISO and a 304 weighted on base percentage, every single player on that roster for San Diego, their weighted on base percentage is above average against right-handed pitching over the past 30 days. It is hot. I think the runs will be provided by the San Diego Padres.
The Pittsburgh Pirates get ready to host the Cubs. If Chicago's going to make a run, it also starts now to stay in National League wild card contention. The Buccos winning a 4-game set, taking 3 of 4 against the Reds this weekend. What happens today inside PNC?
Yeah, how about yesterday Chicago with Aller on the mound or facing Aller? We're able to muster 2 runs yesterday. I actually took that over at 9.5. And if you would have told me that the Marlins would play 7 runs and I would take a loss, I mean, come on, Chicago. So getting back to it today, Jameson Taillon, a decent pitcher, but struggling over the past 30 days, particularly against left-handed batters to the tune of a 406 ISO power number. Mitch Keller also struggling with lefties. I do think that Cubs lineup does have a bounce back today with a lot of lefties in the lineup. Maybe a team total over for the Cubs. Would have
DRS, enjoy the money line. More TEL next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the early line on this Monday to round out our 3 hours together, I am Ben Stevens. We always try to bring you history here on TEL and across the Spiz Grizz Network. So how about this quirk tonight when the Red Sox take on the Toronto Blue Jays? Danny Jansen, who was acquired by Boston around the trade deadline, will catch the continuation of a suspended game between these two clubs from way back on Wednesday, June 26th, that is being made up today. Red Sox manager Alex Cora confirmed last week, which will make Danny Jansen the first Major League Baseball player in history to appear in a single game for both teams. Take it even a step further. When the game was called entering the second inning, it was Danny Jansen up at the dish for the Blue Jays. So he is going to be catching today against his former team with the pinch hitter, so to say, that takes his place in the Jays lineup. Now that is fun. We like history around MLB, and it will happen tonight probably around 7:11 p.m. Eastern time as the Red Sox host the Blue Jays, a minus 154 price in favor of Boston. Total is 9. It's been a disappointing year for the Jays, despite Vladimir Guerrero Jr. having a career renaissance. The Red Sox 4.5 games back of both the Twins and the Royals for the final 2 American League wildcard spot. Again, if Boston is going to turn it on, it needs to happen soon. Over 30 games left for every team around the bigs, but not more than 32 in any spot. So 4.5 games is a lot to make up. You need teams to be really bad, and you have to be really good. That is Boston's charge down the final month plus of this MLB regular season. It was very classic college sports as we awaited week 0 on Saturday to kick off a new 2024 college football season, a year that is unlike anything we had ever seen before, a unique season in college football with the expansion of the 12-team college football playoff and conference realignment everywhere. to get some more conference realignment news right as the season was about to begin. This really hit in the pipeline on Friday night, but reported here on Saturday from Brett McMurphy of Action Network. The Big 12 and UConn in discussions for the Huskies to join the Big 12 in football starting in 2021 and all other sports starting in 2026. Now, that is really big as it comes to basketball. Of course, UConn's men's basketball program. They are the back-to-back reigning national champs in college hoops. And the Big 12 is already one of the best college basketball conferences in the country. Now, Connecticut has a couple of thresholds to meet in terms of investment if the football program is ever going to join the Big 12. Oftentimes when you see these reports about talks and serious discussions of conference realignment, you should take them seriously because it starts as a report, leads to a rumor, and then often lends itself to actual conference realignment. It has been the story of college sports the last four summers, even as the season is now underway in college football. And you might be thinking to yourself, why would Connecticut make this move? The Big East and its resurgence in men's college basketball has proven you can be a basketball-first conference and still have success from TV revenue, kind of, but of course with on-court success and UConn winning two consecutive national titles. But what should it then tell you that UConn is saying to themselves internally in stores, we need that big-time college football revenue to compete with the big dogs? That should tell you that college football and the revenue driver it is will always outweigh either on-court or on-field success, and certainly even the best that you can be in college basketball. You can hate it, but it's the reality of the situation. If UConn thinks they can make their bottom line higher by $15, $25 million per year by taking that sweet, sweet TV revenue from the football deal with the Big 12, they are going to sacrifice whatever it means for the rest of their athletic department. In college basketball, the Big 12 would be a great league, so it wouldn't necessarily be a sacrifice for Dan Hurley's Huskies. But it would be slightly sad for a Big East conference that has really started to emerge in basketball the last few years. It's just a realignment rumor at this moment, but we shall see. That's where things remain at this time. And also a shout out, a belated happy birthday to our graphics producer, Jesse Metzger. Had his B-Day yesterday. Jesse, thank you for all that you do. The Early Line returns tomorrow, 8 a.m. Eastern time on a Tuesday.